Hello and welcome back to the Off the Waivers podcast. I am your host, Eric Barnes. I am joined as always with my co-host, James Andrews. How you doing today, bud?
I'm doing good. I'm excited. There's a lot of NBA news and content that was going around this past week, so I'm excited to get into it.
Absolutely. We'll start off with the recent firing of Hawks head coach Lloyd Pierce, and he's been replaced by former Pacers head coach and their lead assistant, Nate McMillan. How do you feel about this firing?
Yeah, I think it's a move that had to be made for the Hawks. They've underwhelmed so far this season. They're 15-10 in the Eastern Conference. That isn't that strong to begin with. Lloyd Pierce, he's a good head coach in the NBA, but the Hawks had some troubles with him, and they have a lot of talent on their team too. It isn't like this is a team that doesn't have much to work with. They have the talent in place, and they should be a lot better than what they were. So Lloyd Pierce took the fall for that. What do you think?
Absolutely. I think Nate McMillan could be someone who could write the ship for them, but I think they internally have to figure out their team fit and their our identity, because you know this is Trae Young's team. Trae Young has one of the top usage rates in the entire league, but yet again his numbers reflect that someone of a high usage rate, good stats, bad team. And I think they have the right like pieces. I mean, they're a little young, but I think they should be competing right now as they expected to be with the moves they made in the offseason. But I don't, it just hasn't been working out. I mean, do you think it's a team fit issue, or do you think it's just been unlucky based?
I think it's been a combination of injuries and just underperformance from the players. Trae Young needs to be better. He was an all-star starter last season, and although he's still putting up pretty good numbers this year, it hasn't led into winning, which is why he didn't make the all-star team again. I think he needs to be better, and even if that means taking down his usage rate a notch and him getting his teammates more involved and getting everybody in the mix of things might help them win more games. Also, I think Nate McMillan's going to do a good job as their interim coach. He's more of a defensive-minded guy, and I think that's also one of their big issues of concern was their defense this season. But they're finally healthy. They had Rondo, Wanyeka, and Clint Capella all play last night for the first time in a game together, so we'll see what they can do in the second half.
Yeah, absolutely. I think defense is something that will come. I mean, when you have Trae Young on the court, obviously you're going to have a lot to make up for because he's not going to be able to really guard anyone, one of the worst league defenders there is. But, you know, he's starting to give effort on that end. It's all about effort. And then they're missing someone like DeAndre Hunter. DeAndre Hunter, he really was making a big difference early this year. He hasn't played since late January. He's dealing with a knee issue, I think. And he was having a low breakout year for his second year. And he was about 17-5 on the year. He was a great two-way player. He looks like he could be potentially what people thought he would be when he got drafted. And I think the Hawks are really missing that.
Yeah, he really started to see a lot of his potential. And also a couple of their other wings, Bogdan Bogdanovic, has not performed up to what they thought he was going to do when they gave him that big contract this offseason. He's a guy who's been a pretty good wing player in the past and a really efficient scorer too. So if he can stay healthy, he can be a great addition for the Hawks. It's just a matter of playing well for him. And then John Collins is a guy who's been in a lot of trade conversation upcoming here before the deadline. I think he's still a good fit on the Hawks. He's the perfect power forward for what you want in today's game. He can shoot the three ball. He can stretch it out even with a mid-range, but and he's a phenomenal pick-and-roll diver. What do you think? Do you think he can stay on this team, or do they have to trade him?
I think likely he would be moved if the right situation came up, right trade came up for him. I'm still kind of skeptical about the whole like fit with Trae Young. I think, like you said, I think John Collins is a quality young player, and I think any team would be lucky to have him if he's the right fit for them. But I don't know if it's this Hawks team's exactly right for him, because I feel like the best situation would be DeAndre Hunter at the small ball four, and then maybe running a Cam Reddish at the three. But ultimately, we'll see what happens. If the right trade is not there, then don't pull the trigger, because John Collins is still going to help your team. And that's simply that. And especially in the East, where it's so congested, you can be where they're at and they're still very much in the playoff race. If the move's not there, then don't make it. Your team's good enough to make the playoffs, and you should make the playoffs if you can right the ship with Nate McMillan. And speaking about the East, it is congested. But one of the teams at the top, like near the top of the East right now, is the New York Knicks. Before last night, the New York Knicks were above 500 for this the third time after 35 games in the last 20 years. They're back down to 18-18, but they're still very much in the playoff race and a playoff contender. What's the difference this year under Tom Thibodeau?
it's been a strong defensive mindset. They came out from the early get-go of the season with a mission to play defense this season, and that's what they've done, simply put, and that's why they're one of the top seeds in the East. Tom Thibodeau's always been a defensive guy, and he's known to get on his players about it, and if they're not playing defense, they're probably not going to play with him as the coach, and that's why a lot of people were concerned that he wasn't going to be a good fit on this young Knicks team. But they seem to have all bought into his system, and they're really playing hard, and they're giving it their best shot to make the playoffs, and also they're getting some good performances out of guys like RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, and Julius Randle. So even though they don't have a lot of offensive firepower, they're getting just enough to win these games.
Absolutely. I think their defense is definitely keeping them in ball games. Their defense is one of the tops in the league. Like you said, I think everybody's buying in. Even Julius Randle's playing some quality defense for them. I think rebounding is an issue. I think they have too many second chance points. And then obviously their lack of pace. They can get outrun, outgunned sometimes. But the opponent field goal percentage could show that they're a little lucky, but I think this defense is legit, and I think it is going to push them into playoff contention for sure. And I think Knicks fans, don't get your hopes up. It's not going to be a title winning team unless like something miracle happens, but you guys should be in the playoffs, and I like the direction your franchise is going. They're taking the right steps, and I think that this could be a push towards a better future and a brighter future, and maybe even sooner. I think a move could happen at the deadline. Anything's possible. You never know. Victor Oladipo is the guy they're targeting. He might be available. He might be, if he's healthy and all good to go, I think that's someone that the Rockets could flip to him. But I think in the future, I mean, the Knicks are taking the right steps in the right direction. And I think this defensive oriented team is winning ball games. And I think they should be winning ball games. I don't think this is a fluke.
Yeah. Even if they don't have any superstars brewing on their team, they're starting to develop a lot of good players. And that's going to be key for the Knicks, because they can change the entire course of their franchise with one or two big free agency deals. And we've seen it, although free agents haven't been going there lately, people still want to go to New York. They want to play for the Knicks, and they want to play in the Garden with where the big games are at. So I think it wouldn't be surprising at all if in the next year or so to see them pull either a major trade or a free agent signing for a big player that could completely change the course of their franchise. And that's why it's so important that they continue to play well now to attract the players to come there and see that there's a legit supporting cast in place for the superstars. But I do worry about the Knicks' outlook on the season. There's only three games separating the number 4 seed and the number 11 seed right now in the East. I mean, the Knicks could fall in a matter of a week or two of games. They could fall out of playoff contention. So they're going to have to be on their best every single night if they want to compete, because a team like we mentioned, like the Hawks, the Pacers, or the Wizards could easily rise up and have a great second half, and it could leave the Knicks sitting at home for the playoffs.
I think that's definitely true. Anything can happen. I just do think that this team is capable and should be in the playoffs. I think this is a solid roster. I definitely think they're a move away from like really solidifying that, but I think this is a good roster that has, like I said, it's a bright future in New York. I think this is a good base. I mean, they really just stopped with all those like crazy free agent signings. They really pushed smarter about how they're spending their money, and they're trying to build with young players, and the draft's not been great for them, but RJ's been a decent pickup. Emmanuel Quickley was a steal this year, and I think they're heading in the right direction. The next team I want to talk about is from your spotlight game of the week last week, and it was the Los Angeles Clippers. They played the Bucks last Sunday. It was a close one. They couldn't pull it out. They just lost to the Celtics again last night. And Kawhi Leonard didn't play, so that's a caveat. But this team looks like it's up and down. Looks like the team we thought it might be. Do you trust them heading towards the second half of the season and into the playoffs?
Yeah, it was an exciting spotlight game. It came down to a 5-point game. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 36 points for the Bucks to put them away. Right now, I do not trust the Clippers. They were playing really well a few weeks ago, ironically, when both Kawhi Leonard and Paul George were hurt, because a lot of other guys on their team, like Luke Kennard, Marcus Morris, and Lou Williams, were stepping up and shouldering bigger loads and playing a lot better than they are right now. It seems like since those two guys have come back, they've almost been depending on them too much, to the point where those other guys aren't participating enough and aren't getting involved. And it's really going to hurt them down the stretch if they need a third superstar to take over.
Absolutely. I don't think that they have enough on their roster as it is to be able to just rely on Kawhi and Paul George. Because as like stated, and as just common knowledge at this point, Paul George just isn't someone you can trust on or rely on in crunch time or even in the playoffs in general. Like, he's just had bad performance after bad performance. He's got a bad track record. It's kind of like James Harden a little bit, where the numbers really dip, but you could at least see Harden averaging like 30 in a playoff series. But in Paul George, he really struggles. And last year with the way off P stuff, that was like just next level for him. So it's really, he's having a great year, but we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens in the playoffs. But this team can't just lean on Kawhi. Kawhi's not, even a healthy Kawhi can't just carry the shoulder the load and carry this team to a championship, because I think the West is too good. I think there's a lot of great teams coming out of the East at the top of that that they'll have to face and match up with, that I don't think this whole team can like fringe on Kawhi in the half court offense, because the teams will just start focusing on that.
Yeah, last year in the bubble when the Nuggets came back 3-1, they really did it by just keying in on Kawhi and especially not letting him get to the paint and get easy buckets. They made him earn everything he got by taking long jump shots. And when teams do that, when they just build a wall for Kawhi, it's going to leave Paul George and other guys open on the perimeter. So that's where they need to cash in. Paul George was unable to do it. I've never trusted him when the pressure's on the most, because he's always been a guy that's backed away from it. Even on the Pacers, when he was clearly the best player on that team, he still was unable to really lead his team down the final crunch time of the minutes. Yeah, so that's where I think they really need a third scorer like Lou Williams to come in and really take some of the pressure off Kawhi when they're not letting him get into the paint. And also, one of the biggest reasons I don't trust this Clippers team right now is they have the second slowest pace in the NBA behind only the Knicks. That worries me. Even though come playoff time, the game is going to slow down, so it's nice to know that they're going to have a set half-court offense ready, but they're still going to need to be able to run the fast break and get some easy buckets when they can, or else a team like the Lakers or the Jazz that do these kind of things are going to run them off the court. And also, they take the least amount of shots in the restricted area out of anyone in the NBA. Again, you're going to have to be able to get down low and get easy buckets. And right now, all of their players are basically perimeter players. So any shots they do take into the paint is going to come from outside penetration. So for the teams with Anthony Davis or Rudy Gobert, with these elite centers that can really influence a lot of shots inside, it can keep the Clippers from driving in, because they don't have a big man that can go get the buckets.
Yeah. And then simply just the reliance on the 3-point shot. We know you can have a couple bad games in a playoff stretch, and that's just your season. That's it. And then very similar to the Knicks conversation, where you talk about the pace of play, where it's going to slow down, but the fact that teams can turn up the tempo and you can't hang with them and they start getting more possessions than you, that adds up over time, and that can lead to a lot of bad games or a bad stretch. So the Clippers, I think, are still a legitimate title contender, but they have a lot to figure out, and I don't know if I can trust them yet. Speaking of spotlight games, what do you think you have for your spotlight game this week?
Yeah, so for my spotlight game this week, I have the Philadelphia 76ers taking on the Utah Jazz. It's going to be a battle of two of the top big men in the league, Joel Embiid making a case for his MVP versus Rudy Gobert, someone who's making a case for Defensive Player of the Year. We've also got Ben Simmons playing on this one. He put a career high up on Utah last time he played him. What do you think about this matchup?
I think that Ben Simmons, I like to see what happens again against Rudy. He likes to really go at those like high like defensive level players, especially this season with the whole Defensive Player of the Year storyline or narrative going on between those two. I really liked his performance last time out. It'll be a little different this time with Joel Embiid on the court. I think Joel Embiid and Rudy will be the matchup that we'll be more looking forward to seeing. But Ben Simmons being out there and having his career high last time, playing really well recently when he's been on the court, has me really excited to watch them play Utah. And it's just a nice battle between the top two teams in each conference.
Yeah, and I like all the firepower that Utah brings with Joe Ingles and Jordan Clarkson coming off the bench, along with Royce O'Neal and Bojan Bogdanovic. They've got a lot of different guys that can go get buckets in a lot of different ways. But I think Donovan Mitchell is going to be key in this game. He has to be able to counteract Ben Simmons' impact on the game by doing all the things that Ben Simmons does, plus scoring the ball. I like Utah in this game. I think Rudy Gobert is going to come out and have a better showing than he did last time, but I could see this one coming down to the wire, and I think it'll be an exciting matchup. And it is now time for my best bets of the week. Last week, I went 1-for-2. This week, I'm going to try to be better. So I've got two bets here in just a short week. Upcoming, we've got tonight on ESPN at 10 o'clock, the Golden State Warriors over the Portland Trail Blazers. I like the Warriors spread of -2 here. I think Steph Curry is going to come out and continue to show everyone who the best point guard in the game is. We know he's going to take this matchup with Damian Lillard personally. And also, the Warriors have a bit of a healthier team right now with Wiseman and Draymond Green both healthy. And I think that they're the better defensive team also. I don't really trust Portland. They seem to be very hit or miss in games. They'll have a really good quarter and then just give it all away with a really bad quarter. So I like Golden State there. What do you think?
I agree. I think Golden State and Dame or Golden State and Curry versus Dame. It's going to be a great matchup. I think that's the two premier point guards in the entire NBA, and they're both dark horses in the MVP race going forward. They're pulling up a lot of steam. I don't know if they're going to be favorites, but they're really carrying these teams. I like the Blazers. The Blazers have been playing really well of recent. They found themselves closer to the top than they and then the middle of the pack in the Western Conference. So I'll take the Blazers in this matchup.
Yeah, and for my second game, I have the Pacers spread -6 versus the Cavs. The Cavs went on their big losing streak and then have actually counteracted that with a 4-game winning streak. But don't be fooled. The Cavs still are a very flawed team. And I think the Pacers, they've struggled a bit lately. They're going to come out really hard and try to win one before the break. Really, there's no excuses for this Pacers team why they haven't been playing better. They have a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in Miles Turner, along with All-Star Domantas Sabonis and Malcolm Brogdon, who's a very good player. So I like the Pacers in this one. I think they're going to out-hustle the Cavs. They're going to play defense. They're going to be able to guard Colin Sexton and Darius Garland. The Cavaliers really two only strong players, and I can see the Pacers pulling out an easy win by over 6 points in this.
I like the Pacers in this one. I think that this is going to be something they want to get a nice win before the All-Star break, good momentum. I think this is a game they should win, so I agree. This is a good bet. Moving on, we're going to go into our first half awards. This is not a who we think at the end of the year is going to win, because there's a lot of games left to be played. This is simply a who we think after the first half is this award winner. I'm going to go down and name our quote-unquote finalist for the first half awards, and we're doing MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Defensive Player of the Year for this podcast. For the MVP favorites or our finalists for the first half of the MVP award, I have LeBron James. LeBron, he's played 36 games now. The Lakers are 24-12, second in the Western Conference. He's putting up pedestrian LeBron James stats at 25-8-7. And I say pedestrian, like those numbers aren't crazy. Any player would love to average those numbers. But for LeBron, that's kind of a down year. His case is really just the injuries on his team and the media narrative that's really built, because they want to give LeBron and make up for a past one. But personally, I don't buy it. But he is a finalist. He does deserve to be in the top three of our first half MVPs. The second finalist is Joel Embiid, who's averaging about 30-11-3 right now on 52-41-86% shooting. He's also got the 86% from the free throw line. Is very important, because he's also the highest free throw shooter in the entire the highest free throw rate in the entire league. He's the best player at getting to the foul line. He's kind of almost Shaq-like at this point in the first half, where he can get to the foul line and it's hard to, or he can get to the bucket and it's hard to not foul him, or it's hard to keep him off the line, especially for the referees. And his face-up game's been next level this year. And he's got the 76ers at the top of the Eastern Conference. And then our third finalist is Nikola Jokic. Nikola Jokic is averaging about 27-11-8 for the Denver Nuggets, who are about in the middle of the pack, but they're in the playoffs in the West. He's had a fantastic year. The rest of the team's been up and down, but he's been probably like the best point guard, one of the best point guards in the entire league, and he's a center, and he's been really special. What do you think about those three?
Yeah, so out of everyone on that list, Nikola Jokic has impressed me more than anyone. He is shooting phenomenally this season, almost 60-40-90 from the field. That is insane. While doing it as your team's main facilitator as well. The Nuggets have really disappointed me this season. Jamal Murray busted out in the bubble, but he's kind of come back down to earth and hasn't played up to that star level player. And Michael Porter Jr., also a guy who was supposed to be their third star scorer, he also hasn't really developed the way the Nuggets hoped he would. So this is a team with a lot of depth and a lot of good players, but Gary Harris has struggled this season, and the Nuggets as a whole haven't really just gotten it going, and it's had to have been Jokic carrying them night in, night out, and that's why I'm so impressed with him. However, I would give the MVP right now in the first half to Joel Embiid. He led the 76ers to the best record in the East. They've been the most consistent team in the NBA outside of Utah all season long. And like you mentioned, his free throw shooting has really been one of the big differences for Philadelphia and being able to close out games, because in the past, teams would be able to just put him and Ben Simmons on the foul line and it would really handicap them at the end of games. But now you can't really do that. And that's a big reason why they're winning.
I think, Nikola Jokic is a good sleeper pick. I think that he, going towards the future, someone to really still keep an eye on in this race. But for the first half, it has to be Joel Embiid. Joel Embiid, he's been the most consistent he's ever been in his entire career. He's been the healthiest he's ever been in his entire career. He's been on the court longer than he's ever been in his entire career. He's just honestly on a whole nother level than he was last year. He looks like he is for sure, even though Jokic is playing so well, he looks like in the first half he was the best big man in the entire league. And he looks like he's a very dominant force. And I think he's the MVP for myself as well.
Exactly. We've always known Joel Embiid could be the best big man in the league. The question was, would he go out and do it? But I think that's where what has really impressed me about him this season is that he's kind of put some of his baggage that he had in the past away. His Twitter fingers seem to have gone away. He's not as active on social media and doing stuff like that, which is what he got a lot of criticism for in the past. And also, he's playing hard, and he's also in shape. He's been called out in a playoff series in the past before for just simply not being in shape and not being able to close out games strong. Those aren't even concerns anymore. He looks healthy, and he's playing hard, and he looks locked in. So when he's doing that, he's easily the best big man in the league.
Absolutely. So moving on to our Rookie of the Year candidates, this is really a two-man race. It's between LaMelo Ball of the Charlotte Hornets, the number 3 overall pick in the draft, and I believe the number 12 overall pick for the Sacramento Kings, Tyrese Haliburton. Both of these players have had a major impact on their team. But LaMelo Ball in the first half was absolutely stellar. He completely shocked me. And I think he's deserving this award. What do you think?
Yeah, I was a guy that was very critical of LaMelo Ball coming into the draft. His defense didn't look up to par for what it needed to be in the NBA. And also, he took a lot of bad shots and wasn't a great shooter. But those don't really seem to be concerns early on in the season. He started off the bench and was playing pretty well, putting up some good numbers. And then an injury happened to Charlotte, and he was able to get a starting spot, and he just ran with it and never looked back. He's been averaging over 17 points per game since being promoted to a starter, and he's been shooting pretty well from deep. He's also been taking some deep-range three-point shots, which also helps opens up the floor for everybody else, and he's just been a great facilitator and team leader for them as they have Gordon Hayward, Terry Rozier, and Devontae Graham around him. They've got some pretty good scorers to surround him with, and you see he's doing a pretty good job of taking advantage of it.
Yeah, I don't want to take it lightly. I don't think the three-point shot I'm still skeptical about. He has been knocking it down, which is very helpful for his game and opens a lot of things up for that team. I'm still a little skeptical about it, though. But you have to think about his ability to be a player like Jason Kidd, the passes that he makes, not even just like the flashy ones, but just the ability to like have that touch. Jokic has that kind of like as well, where like he can put the ball exactly where the shooter needs or the receiver needs it. And it just having a player like that, a playmaker like that, that's so special, can really just completely amplify your offense. And I think we're seeing that in Charlotte. And I think he's the clear winner. But that doesn't mean I don't want to give a little shine to Tyrese Haliburton, because he's had a major impact on the Kings. He's only started 2 games this year, but he's played about 30 of them. He has really dominated when he's been on the court. He really changes what the Kings can do. They're not playing well, but like he really gets some options going forward. He's shooting really well when a lot of people were critical of his shot as well coming out of college. But he's been a very impactful player. He does a lot of the things that aren't stat-wise or scoring-wise, but he's still putting up a nice 13-4-5 for the Kings coming off the bench. And he's a nice second primary ball handler or secondary ball handler behind De'Aaron Fox. And you can play him side by side. He fits in well. But Tyrese Haliburton, I think, is still a name to think about and I give a shine to.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite rookies from this draft. He's been blocked up in Sacramento with Buddy Hield and De'Aaron Fox starting over him. So he may not even be able to get an opportunity in Sacramento, but he's certainly made his impact felt. He's shooting over 40% from the three-point line this season. And what more can you really ask of him? De'Aaron Fox and a lot of other guys up in Sacramento, including Marvin Bagley, have not played well at all. So you can't put any of this blame on Tyrese Haliburton. He looks like he's ready to be a solid point guard for any team in the NBA, really.
All right. And then moving on to the Defensive Player of the Year conversation. We talked about it a little bit earlier with Ben Simmons and Rudy Gobert. And those are our top 2 guys. And I think we also mentioned earlier when we were talking about the Pacers, our third sleeper is Miles Turner, and I really like Miles Turner for this going forward. I think he could come in and steal it. But my first half defensive player of the year has got to be Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons has been the most versatile and best defender in the entire league, in my opinion, in the first half. He's picked up a lot of steam, a lot of momentum recently with his games against like Luka and then Dame as well, where he's really shut them down. He's had a lot of great plays. He leads the league in hustle plays and deflections. He just is all over there. He guards everybody's best player. He's doing the little things, and that's why I think he deserved to be an all-star this year, and that's why I think he is the defensive player of the year for me in the first half.
Yeah, this is something I've gone back and forth on, Rudy Gobert and Ben Simmons. They both have played phenomenally on defense, both leading their teams to the number one record in the in their respective conferences. I would have to go Rudy Gobert by a slim margin here just because he has led the Jazz to the best record in the league and just the way they're dominating opponents. People genuinely look scared to just even drive the ball in on Gobert. Even dogs like Jimmy Butler and other players just do not attempt shots in the paint when he's on the court. Ben Simmons, though, I do like his ability to guard anybody 1 through 5. He does struggle with some smaller point guards sometimes, but that isn't really a concern for Philadelphia because of his size. He can guard anybody on the court. So I think if he can continue to come out and put clamps on players like he has, I think he has a good shot to win the Defensive Player of the Year award this year. But for the first half right now, I like Gobert.
Yeah, his impact on the court, it's actually tremendous. It's a completely different Utah team when he's not out there. He really impacts how the offense is game plan. And Miles Turner is someone similar to that. He's not the same level as Rudy, obviously, but his shot blocking ability is starting to get to that point. He's got more blocks than Rudy this year, and he's leading the league in blocks plus steals, which I think why he deserves to be in this conversation to be mentioned. But it is right now a two-man race here. You go with Rudy. I'm going to go with Ben. And we'll see how it shakes up for the second half of this season.
The NBA announced the participants for both the dunk contest and the three-point contest. The three-point contest is going to take place on Sunday before the game, and the dunk contest will be at halftime. So let's take a look at these participants. We got Devin Booker, Stephen Curry, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Zach LaVine, and Jaylen Brown for the three-point contest. Who do you like?
I think a lot of people would go for like a Devin Booker or a Steph Curry here, and I think that's what you might go seeing the notes. But I'm going to go with the sleeper. Zach LaVine is my pick for the three-point competition. Everybody's all known him for All-Star Weekend as the dunk contest guy, but he's a sniper. He's a sharpshooter, and I think he gets hot. He gets rolling. He could easily win this this contest for sure.
Yeah, all six participants are really good shooters. Any one of them could come out and win it. It's really just a matter of handling the pressure of being able to make it on the three-point contest. Guys have said that is a lot harder than they expect it to be, but how can you pick against Steph Curry here? He's by far the best shooter on the planet. He's done this before. I think he'll be the one to come out and win it.
Yeah, and then for the dunk contest, we have Anthony Simons, Cassius Stanley, and Obi Toppin. Who do you think out of those three has the best chance? And it's kind of weird that it's only three, but what do you think out of those three?
Yeah, so out of those three, Cassius Stanley is the one that intrigues me the most. He has an insanely high vertical. He came into Duke last year and set records for it. And his vertical has essentially gotten him this far into the NBA. So I'm really curious to see what he comes out with. But right now, I'm going to have to guess Obi Toppin's going to win it. I think he'll provide the best package out of everyone. He's also a very tall player, either 6'9 or 6'10. So he's right at the rim. He can do a lot. I expect him to come out and win it.
Yeah, I think he's of that like Amari Stoudemire role or a mold. I think he could be a potential favorite for this competition, but I do like Cassius Stanley. Cassius Stanley, I've been watching his mixtapes since he was a freshman out in California. He's got some major hops. I like him for this competition. I think he's someone to really keep an eye on. Moving on, we're about to start to close down here, but we can't close out the show without doing my favorite segment of the week, which is Oof of the Week, which is simply put the biggest L of the week. If you don't want to be on this list, if you're on this list, you took a pretty big L. Some of the major mentions on Sunday, the Kings, they lost a close one by 1 point to the Hornets, but they were up 8 with about 50 seconds to go. They just completely collapsed. It's kind of been, it was a game that kind of detailed how their season's gone so far. A lot of hopes, and this team just doesn't put it together in close games. And this was an absolutely huge, huge loss. And it ended up with Malik Monk and one and a free throw to win the game. A devastating loss and a big oof, in my opinion. A second oof of the week, or second candidate for Oof of the Week would be the Houston Rockets, who just lost their 12th straight the other night, also on Sunday night, which was their 11th straight. They lost to the Memphis Grizzlies by 49 points, which is, I think, a massive move. Anytime you're losing by almost 50 to another team, you got to be on this list. And then just last night, the Devin Booker double technical ejection, the refs taking over just because he's staring. That's got to be on here too. That's got to be a late addition. But my pick for Oof of the Week has to be the NBA 2K sale with Jason Tatum. And if you aren't aware what happened here, NBA 2K had a great marketing idea where they decided to put their game on sale and make it based on how many points Jason Tatum was going to score. And Jason Tatum, he averages 25 points a game. He was likely to go for 30 on that night and be a pretty good sale. Instead, against the Pacers on Friday night, Jason Tatum had his second lowest scoring output of the season. He had just 9 points, a big backfire on that one. And for me, that's the Oof of the Week. Which one do you like out of this, though?
Yeah, that one was certainly the funniest. Leave it to 2K for running a promotion just to have it backfire in their face. But I think Jason Tatum ultimately was doing a favor for everybody, coming from somebody who plays 2K myself. It's not a very good game, and I would not recommend buying it for anyone out there who doesn't currently have it. But my Oof of the Week would have to be the Devin Booker one. Watching this game, it really looked like the referees had money on the Lakers to win this game, and that's why they threw out Devin Booker. I can't think of any other reason why you would toss a guy for literally just staring someone down and then tossing them the basketball on a foul that wasn't even committed by him. That one was just completely mind-boggling. That's going to be my oof of the week.
Yeah, that was a pretty big L. But the Suns did get the dub, so it was all good in the end. But that 2K one's just great. but we're just going to go ahead and close it out. Any shout-outs before we get out of here?
Yeah, shout-out to Joakim Noah. He announced his retirement the other day. Credit to him for having a phenomenal career. He was a two-time All-Star and a 2013-2014 Defensive Player of the Year Award winner. When Derrick Rose went down with all his injuries for the Chicago Bulls, Joakim Noah really helped keep them afloat and get them to the playoffs for several years and even win a few playoff series. It looked like Chicago was going to be doomed after Derrick Rose went down, but he kept them relevant for a while, so shout out to him.
Absolutely, he had a great career. Defensive Player of the Year, understated the value he had for the Chicago Bulls in the 2010s, and a great player and a great career. That's just about do it for us. Make sure you guys go ahead and check out our socials. We're on Twitter at the OTW Pod. We're on TikTok at Off the Waivers. We're on YouTube now. This is our first YouTube video, so if you're watching this, thank you for watching. We're at Off the Waivers and Media for that, so check that out. And then if you have any questions or just any comments for us as well, you can leave that at our Gmail at offthewaiversmailbag@gmail.com. We'll look to do those future. If we start getting some of those coming in, we'll look to do those future at the end of the episode. But I think that's just about going to do it for us. From me and James, this has been Off the Waivers Podcast. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Have a good night.